When it comes to hip-hop, Atlanta boasts some really big names. There's CeeLo, T.I., Ludacris, Andre 3000, Big Boy, Killer Mike, and the list goes on and on, with new chart toppers coming out of the Southern Capital all the time, which was not always the case. Jewel Wicker is an Atlanta-based entertainment reporter. Her recent article for Vice chronicles how Atlanta's hip-hop notoriety got a big boost from its club scene and club hits like the one you're hearing now, What's Up, What's Up by Playa Poncho. And Jewel Wicker is here to tell us more. Jewel, welcome back.
Thanks for having me.
So the 90s, kind of big battle between East Coast and West Coast hip hop, you know, Biggie, Tupac. There was Atlanta there in the middle at this time. What was going on there in terms of a hip hop city?
You know, I think it's interesting. I think we tend to have some revisionist history when we look back on the 90s when it comes to Atlanta music, because we did. We had So So Def and we had LaFace, which was producing Outkast and all of these things.
Huge record labels.
Yeah, but Atlanta really had to fight to prove that it was a hip-hop city, I think, originally. And, you know, in the 90s, for much of the 90s, it was still a lot of East Coast and West Coast and music from other cities, Miami, Memphis, other southern cities that were really penetrating the club scene, Freaknik, all of the nightlife here in Atlanta.
So this was by 1995 at the Source Awards in New York City. Andre 3000 of Outkast accepted the award for Best New Rap, and he was booed. Why?
Well, that was the height of the East Coast, West Coast, you know, saga. And I think that, you know, it's funny because I talked to DJ Nabs about this moment and he's like, we tend to look back at it and think that's when the tides turned. The minute Andre 3000 said the South got something to say, everybody listened up and Atlanta became the hip hop mecca. But no, it still was a fight at that point, and we still had to prove that we had something to say and that Atlanta was a city that should be listened to.
And so you started looking into this history and found rapper Lil Jon among those that you follow in a venue called Club 559. This is near Atlanta's West End. Lil Jon said he had to make the crowd there dance if a song was going to be a hit in the city. Here's a little bit of his song, Who You With. So he's telling the audience to dance. So Lil Jon actually made songs that were designed not for radio or for the charts, but for these clubs. Why is that significant?
Well, you know, Lil Jon is from here. He went to high school here. He grew up hosting parties here and then went on to start DJing reggae sets at clubs for AUC students. Then he entered 559. He really was a patron of that club. And he talks about, you know, making Who You With and sending it to DJ Greg Street. And he was like, what is this? But, you know, Lil Jon was in these clubs. He knew what they were about. And so he was really able to make that first song for the clubs because he was a part of the scene. I think that's really interesting. And I think that's why Jermaine Dupri eventually made him A&R of So So Def, because he knew that Lil Jon knew what was going on in those clubs.
Jermaine Dupri running a big record, a record company that was a lot of national interest in at that time. But let's look at Club 559. It was pretty much frequented by Atlanta locals. Is that who was there?
Yeah, I think it's funny because if you go back and you look at media coverage at that time, it wasn't very favorable. I think it was like the rowdy club. It was locals. It was a lot of traffic coming to that residential neighborhood. But the locals really looked at it as a hub. That was where they went after work to party and to let loose and to have fun. And I think maybe if you weren't from Atlanta, you didn't understand that culture. So it wasn't perceived that well. But for the locals, it was everything.
Well, how about the other club that you look at, Club Kaya, attracted both locals and transplants? This is a place where newcomers not always welcome. How did Atlanta's hip-hop club scene react to outsiders?
Well, you know, I think Club Kaya, when we look at Club Kaya, DJ Nabs had a set there, but then eventually Frank Ski had a set there, and he's a transplant. He wasn't from here, but he talks about how the club scene in Atlanta is really what drew him to the city when he was interviewing to move here. And he looked around and he saw that there wasn't, you know, house music or things that transplants from up north were listening to. And so he was able to create a set that really spoke to those transplants. So it was really the best of both worlds.
So he was a DJ from Baltimore, came down here, DJed in the club. And now, of course, he's Frank Ski on B103. Right. But DJ Nabs, one of these transplants that you talked to, he recorded all of his sets. So does he have all this on cassette?
Oh, my God. I went to DJ Nabs's like archival room, and it is like a candy store. And he has like a 5-5, because he started at 559 and ended up getting kicked out in a very interesting story, but he ended up going to Club Kaya after that. He has like a 559 blazer, and he recorded all of his sets. And I asked him why he did, and he said, "My mom told me to write everything down, so I did." And now he has these archives that he's able to license out when MTV does, like, Behind the Music. And, you know, when all of these things look at the history of Atlanta music, they go to him because he has all of this on cassette.
Wow. So what are some of the names that came through on these nights at DJ Nab sets at Club Kaya?
Criss Cross, of course. I mean, because DJ Nabs was their DJ. He actually toured with them and Michael Jackson at one point. But then Jay-Z, you know, before Jay-Z was as big as he is today, but Jay-Z came through and did a set, and he performed Money Ain't a Thing with Jermaine Dupri. I mean, that's a moment to remember.
Yeah, and he's got that on cassette?
He has that. He has it all.
Well, so long before the New York Times called Atlanta's hip-hop center of gravity were Atlanta's clubs, and entertainment reporter Jewel Wicker wrote about them. She dug into this club scene that catapulted the city's hip-hop scene, really. So many of the artists performing at the clubs we've been talking about were not from Atlanta, but coming to Atlanta to hang out in these clubs. How was their influence felt on the music being born here?
Well, it's interesting because when you look at, you know, I think in the early 2000s, Whitney and Bobby lived here. Diddy has long called Atlanta his second home. So, you know, his group 112, he met them outside of Club 112. That's where they got their name from. He was very much a part of clubs like Kaya. And if you talk to DJ Nabs and other DJs that were there at that time, they'll talk to you about hearing them party and all of those things. So, I mean, I think they were very influential and a big part of Atlanta becoming what it ended up becoming.
And did they bring the business interest here too, or were they just coming here for inspiration and that kind of alchemy?
Well, I think they kind of realized that Atlanta had the, you know, now people know that Atlanta talent is kind of where it's at when it comes to Atlanta hip hop. But I think they were some of the early people who realized that, you know, but back in that time we had LaFace. Like I said, we had So Def in the early 2000s. We had Ludacris, who was a DJ here, ended up opening his own label, Disturbing the Peace. T.I. had Grand Hustle. So I think we had a lot of business there. But eventually after, you know, the digital world came to be, those businesses kind of dissipated.
You just beautifully set up a ground zero moment. 2001, the city gets its own anthem.
Welcome to Atlanta, where the players play, and we ride on them things like every day. Big beats hit streets, see gangsters roaming, and parties don't stop till 8 in the morning. Welcome to
Atlanta, where the players. All right, Jill, what are we listening to here? What happened in this moment?
Oh, I mean, I think, you know, Jermaine Dupri and So Def was known to make music, like I said, for the clubs. That's why they enlisted Lil Jon to be A&R there in the early 90s. And so this was really an ode to Atlanta partying, right? It's still to this day when we had the Super Bowl in January. I couldn't tell you how many times I heard this song. It is still the Atlanta anthem.
Well, every city needs its anthem. But it is one thing to have fun at a party, another to turn that into what is now a musical legacy. How did this club scene launch Atlanta into the hip-hop capital that we now know?
Well, I think for many reasons, Atlanta became the hip-hop capital. You know, it was a great place to party, but when you look at the reasons that we had such a vibrant nightlife, the reasons that we had Freaknik and all of these things in the 90s, it's because Atlanta was a black hub, right? We had the AUC Center, and we had all of these people who were coming here, like Diddy, to party. And I think that mixed with the fact that, you know, L.A. Reid and LaFace had come here, So Def was here, it created a perfect storm for Atlanta to become what it is today.
So there's a lot of talent here today, but how about the record labels and the companies? Where are the big decisions being made about who gets recorded?
Well, I think that's a big conversation that we're having today. You know, like I said, when the digital boom came, a lot of those companies left or folded. And now we're starting to see some of those companies come back. Some record labels are coming back. We have streaming services like Pandora and Spotify have offices here, even though they're small. Cobalt, which is a publishing company, has an office here. We're starting to see some of that music business come back. And it really is because a lot of the talent is frustrated and kind of fed up with having to go to LA and New York when we're the ones that are making the music that really drives the culture.
So the clubs we've been talking about, many of them now closed. New ones have, of course, sprung up in their place. But what is Atlanta's club scene like now?
I mean, I think, you know, Diddy kind of talked about being frustrated when he came here for the Super Bowl and partied with Lil Jon and Jermaine Dupri, and was frustrated because clubs in general aren't what they used to be. You know, we have bottle service, we have VIP sections. Back then, there was no VIP section. There was no bottle service. Diddy and, you know, celebrities were just partying in the middle of the dance floor. And that's just not the way it is now. We have cell phones. Everybody is kind of going to be seen. So I think clubs have become more of a, it's capitalism, right?
Yeah.
Clubs are a moneymaker, and so they've found out ways to make more money, but that maybe has taken a little of the fun out of it.
Yeah, well, and I wonder if that's those special ingredients, that kind of freedom that allowed this kind of music to be born and experiment and thrive.
Well, I think music is made differently now, and so I think that the clubs certainly play a role in if something becomes a hit in a small way, but I don't think it has as big a role as it did, you know, back in the 90s and back in the early 2000s. And I think that's just a sign of the time. Everything is digital nowadays. You know, you can become a hit star from a meme, from TikTok, like we've seen with Lil Nas.
Right, right.
You know, so, yeah.
You don't need to be in a club.
You don't need to be in a club anymore.
Atlanta is, of course, trying once again to grow its music industry. Recently, Georgia Representative Erica Thomas announced plans to co-chair this Georgia Entertainment Caucus that could meet tax incentives for the music industry here in Georgia, like the movie industry. How could that play into the narrative and potential growth of Atlanta as a hip hop capital?
Yeah, so the tax incentive went into effect January of 2018. They're still trying to work it out. You know, I think the thresholds are a little high now. So they're still trying to figure out what is the proper threshold to really bring business here into the city in the way that we've seen with the film and the tax business. So we'll see how that goes. I think it'll take a little while for them to find their footing, but hopefully it works out.
Jewel Wicker, thanks for bringing us this part of Atlanta hip hop history we just don't hear about.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
She's an entertainment journalist based in Atlanta and again wrote for Vice about how Atlanta's clubs in the 90s helped fuel Atlanta into becoming a hip hop capital. We're going to leave you with Atlanta's own Migos with Walk It, Talk It. And a little programming note here, on Monday, we talked with Arts ATL film critic Beth Ward, who told us that the USA Today rated the Atlanta Film Festival number 2. We heard from a listener who said, really? And we got it. We looked. We checked. We've got it posted online if you want to hear about it. And we're going to learn about a new play about columnist Irma Bombeck and why her humor still hits home when On Second Thought returns. I'm Virginia Prescott. Stay with us. Walk it like I talk it. Yeah. Take my shoes and walk a mile, something that you can't do.